About 70th Avenue, right on down to about East L Street. Stay tuned to Alternative Talk, 11:50 a.m. The Dog Show with Julie Forbes is coming up next.
Sanders at 1600, Flint Water. I'm Chaz Henry. Democratic presidential candidate Bernie Sanders says he and President Obama talked about foreign policy, the economy, and a little bit of politics during Sanders' visit to the White House today.
We have differences of opinion. I was on the floor of the Senate for 8.5 hours. In disagreement with him over taxes. We disagree over the TPP. But by and large, over the last 7 years, on major issue after major issue, I have stood by his side.
The governor of Michigan was in the city of Flint today, saying the state will do more to deal with the city's tainted water supply. Correspondent Steve Kastenbaum.
Rick Snyder announced that he formed a panel of government officials and experts to address the problems that will haunt the people of Flint down the road.
Now is the time to act, to do things to help the people of Flint. Address the damage that's been done.
The committee, made up of 17 appointees, will recommend ways to help people exposed to lead, study Flint's water infrastructure, and look at possible upgrades.
A lot of bottled water being sent to Flint today, too. I'm Chaz Henry. Law enforcers in Oregon say the armed group occupying a national wildlife preserve there has been given ample opportunity to leave peacefully. Last night, a traffic stop of a convoy of occupiers ended with one shot dead, 8 others arrested. Harney County Sheriff Dave Ward urging the remaining handful to leave.
If we have issues with the way things are going in our government, we have a responsibility as citizens to act on those in an appropriate manner. We don't arm up.
In northern Illinois, a grand jury has indicted the wife of a police lieutenant who stole money from a law enforcement charity, tried to hire someone to kill a city leader who'd found him out, then killed himself, trying to make it appear he'd been murdered. Prosecutors say Melody Glinowitz helped her husband embezzle money from the charity and launder those funds. And an attorney for two anti-abortion activists facing charges after making undercover videos about Planned Parenthood say the activists were, in his words, indicted by a runaway grand jury. The Dow right now down 253. I'm Chaz Henry.
It's time that you are heard, and I don't mean in just a conversation. I mean really heard. Imagine hosting your very own radio program on Alternative Talk 1150. Talk about being heard. Call 425-653-1150 right now to learn how affordable it can be to host your own radio show. Time slots are going fast, so take hold of this chance by dialing 425-653-1150. Alternative Talk, we have an opportunity waiting just for you.
Good afternoon, Eric Ryder here with you on Alternative Talk, 11:50 a.m. Time now for a quick look at our weather outlook. Looks like we'll see increasing rain late this afternoon and evening for our Thursday. We'll see rain early on in the day, gusty as well, mostly cloudy, and Friday rainy and breezy once again. Highs expected around 54 on Thursday, 48 on Friday. Saturday looks like some clearing happening.
Views expressed on this program are those of the hosts, guests, and callers, and are not necessarily those of this station, its management, or other advertisers. This is Alternative Talk 1150 AM, KKNW Seattle, and KLCK FM 98.9 Digital HD3 Seattle.
Welcome to The Dog Show with Julie Forbes, an evolved perspective on life with dogs.
Well, it's all right, riding around in the breeze. Well, it's all right, if you live the life you please. Well, it's all
right. Welcome to The Dog Show with Julie Forbes. It's great to be here today. Fine day to take your dog for a walk. Eric, I'm sure you'd agree with me.
Absolutely. Nice and cool.
Pretty mild, huh?
Yeah.
Well, you know, this is our 361st episode. We had our first episode in February of 2009.
Four more, and we've got a year's
full
worth.
Full year.
Yeah.
Yeah. Last week we were full circle with 360.
Right.
Yeah, now we'll be full year. So it's, you know, it's been such an honor, really, and pleasure over the years. I have gotten to talk with so many inspiring and brilliant people doing various amazing things with dogs. I've talked with some experts, some people in the field of canine science. I've talked with Mark Beckoff and Alexandra Horowitz and Brian Hare and Patricia McConnell and Temple Grandin and all of these amazing people in that field. I've talked with some really fantastic authors and then some just incredible organizations Courthouse Dogs, Prison Pet Partnership Program, Old Dog Haven, Beagle Freedom Project, these people that are just rocking it. And we have back today Kim Sill, who's the founder of an organization called D-Cups Saving Teacups. And I interviewed Kim in 2010, and I thought, I was referred to the organization by actually a Seattle artist, Jennifer Bloom, with Haute Portraiture. She does really beautiful work. And she referred me to the D-Cups down in Beverly Hills. And I had Kim on, and I was, you know, over the last 5 years, I've never forgotten my conversation with Kim. And their really incredible approach to working with communities and with, you know, in the realm of dog rescue and pet stores and really raising awareness of puppy mills and stuff. And I'm just, the other, just, you know, within the last week, I thought, I wonder if they are still at it. And I looked up the website, sure enough, and not to my surprise at all, they've got, you know, a lot of great stuff going on. And so I'm so thrilled to welcome back Kim Sill, founder of D-Cups Saving Teacups, onto the dog show. Kim, welcome back.
Thank you, Julie. I am so happy to be here. And congratulations. 361 is a big, big number.
Yeah, I know. It's amazing. Week after week, I was just thinking today, oh, I'm back already. It's you know, another week. It's so great. So thanks for being a part of the show and for doing the work that you are doing, saving dogs and raising awareness, you know, within communities about responsible acquisition of family pets and puppy mills and all that stuff. So I wanted to, you know, take this opportunity to hear about what you have been doing. I mean, it's been 5 years since we talked. I know you've got a movie and all sorts of stuff. There was a puppy mill awareness day, it looks like, down in, was that in L.A.?
Yes.
Cool.
Julie, after we spoke, we actually did do the first Puppy Mill Awareness Day on the West Coast. It's an amazing event where we actually rented La Brea Tar Pits, which is a huge historical park here in Los Angeles.
Mm-hmm.
I organized that when I was still with Last Chance for Animals, and we had Pink and Cesar Millan and lots of celebrities come out to talk about the horrific conditions that, you know, are experienced in puppy mills.
Yeah.
And we had a lot of the puppy mill survivors there, and we got them all adopted out. And, it was a really great day, and we've done one every year since.
Mm.
They typically take place in Lancaster, Pennsylvania, which is where they've been going on for quite some time, but now we have them out here on the east, I mean, on the West Coast. So it's mm-hmm. really helpful for the people out here in California to understand what's going on with puppy mills, because a lot of those puppy mills are in the Midwest section of the United States and in Pennsylvania. And it's been very, very, very rewarding to be able to be part of that.
Yeah. I know that more and more now with technology, and I've done a number of shows over the years about various puppy mill related topics. And, you know, they take lots of different forms these days, from the sort of factory farm that, you know, we could imagine, like you mentioned, out in the Midwest or stuff like that, to smaller, relatively smaller scale, quote-unquote, family-operated, where they sort of they live online and sell puppies that way, too. And, you know, anybody can make a nice website and say all nice things.
I think that is the trend, Julie, is to have, you know, a lot of these people do go online. You know, commerce is moving toward being online, and it's the same in businesses like puppy millers. They mm-hmm. figure out a way to make the most money off of what they're breeding. And these poor animals, you know, the common denominator, it doesn't matter whether it's coming from an online facility or somebody that may look like they have a cute little backyard, but the dogs are actually being bred in the garage. I mean, it really doesn't matter. The common denominator is don't breed for profit. If these people are breeding to make money off of these animals, then they're breeding for profit. And if you buy those animals, it's like buying drugs from a drug dealer. Mm-hmm. They're going to continue to use your money to breed more. And it's not the cute little puppy's fault that it was bred that way. And it's not the mama and daddy's fault that they're being used this way. But unfortunately, the mama and daddy get the worst of the situation,
yeah,
where they're bred and bred and bred, mm-hmm, year after year until they're no longer of any use. Mm-hmm. And then they either get euthanized there on the facility, or they get dumped at a shelter where I have rescued too many to name. And it's just really an unfortunate cycle that we don't have to be part of. And I think that the public is coming into a place now where, you know, they're saying no and they're doing their homework and they're not falling into this situation where they buy a dog that might have genetic defects because it is inbred.
Right.
You know, I mean, there are responsible breeders out there, Julie, as you know.
Mm-hmm.
And I really think that if you do your homework and you get people that are in the pet industry to help you, you can find the right dog for you.
Yeah.
I mean, you know what I believe. Go to a shelter. Shelter dogs rock.
Yeah. And that if somebody is sort of attached to a purebred dog, there's plenty of purebred dogs in through purebred rescue groups and also at shelters as well.
It's amazing how many purebred rescue groups have popped up in the last 5 years since you and I talked.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I think there's probably 150 different purebred rescue groups in the United States. I mean, when I first started protesting pet shops that were selling puppy mill pet shops, you know, in Los Angeles, there were 103 pet shops selling mass-produced dogs that were imported from other states.
Wow.
In California.
Mm.
Now that we have a law in Los Angeles County, you're not allowed to sell animals that way. So fortunately, we have those laws. Other cities in the nation have those laws.
Mm-hmm.
So it's putting a dent in the population of these dogs being continued to be mass-produced.
Yeah. So you have a movie that is... had a showing. It's called Saved in America. And
yes,
what's going
I
on
did,
with that?
Julie. So, Julie, when I was working with Last Chance for Animals, I filmed, you know, hundreds and hundreds of hours of different things that I found to be very telling as far as what was going on in the animal welfare world. And I put those pieces of footage together, and I made a short documentary called Saved in America.
Mm-hmm.
And it really captures what's going on in the with the first responders of rescue in shelters that don't have any resources, like San Bernardino City in California, where they don't even have a vet or a vet tech on staff when mm-hmm. animals get taken in there by animal control that are either hurt. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's just so many things that we don't think about. Most taxpaying people think that, oh, our dollars are taking care of all this kind of stuff. Well, in a lot of cities in the nation, that we don't even have money to provide for a vet to be on staff at government-run shelters.
Yeah.
So my film talks about the unsung heroes and shows amazing transformation stories of animals that were rescued. And during the time that we filmed, over the 5 years that I filmed, we saved 4,500 dogs from death row.
Wow.
We worked with 130 different rescue groups across the nation, and many of those people are highlighted because the heroes in the story are the wonderful people that, you know, do this for no money. They do it with very little resources, and they're only doing it to save an animal. They're not doing it for a thank you. They're not doing it for any other reason than they know they want to help an animal.
Mm-hmm.
Amazing.
Yeah, it really is. We had a small taste of that. It has actually been almost 2 years now. There's a local organization up here called Old Dog Haven, and they get old dogs out of shelters. And
God bless them.
I know. And we took in an Old Dog Haven dog who was a hospice dog, and that she probably didn't have too much longer to live, but it doesn't matter. Just get her out of the shelter and let her live however much time she has left, you know, surrounded by love, getting the care that she needs and all that kind of stuff. And we've had her now for almost 2 years. She was like, hey, it's not too bad here. I think I might hang around. But I'll tell you, driving away from that shelter with her in the car and being able to tell her you're never going to have to see the inside of a shelter again was just so incredibly powerful for us. I mean, I understand what motivates people just internally to do this work. It's
really amazing. And working with senior dogs like that, knowing that your time, you know, it's a ticking time bomb because you know they're going to not last very long, and you want to give them the best that you can give them for that short period of time.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, those people to me they're just angels on earth. I don't know how they do it.
I mean,
what they do is really difficult.
Yeah, it's really incredible. And the old dogs, I mean, I think it's incredible, and I know you have more examples of this than you can remember. to see the resilience of these dogs who come from all different types of really rough, either emotionally rough or physically rough conditions, to see how they can heal and bounce back.
You're so right. The transformation process for a dog, it's unlike, you know, humans, we hold baggage. We, you know, we just can't get over things sometimes, you know. But you'll see in the most horrific abuse situations with an animal, it seems like the recovery is so, so quick. And they're so forgiving and they're so loving. And the damage that the humans have done to them, they forget about it and wag their tail and love the next human that comes along. It's just amazing what you get to see. And I feel very blessed that since I've worked with you and since I made my film, I've opened a chain of rescue pet shops called Shelter Hope Pet Shops. I opened them because I really thought that most people won't go to a shelter because of knowing that it's a sad place and they don't want to see all the ones that don't make it. So I thought, well, if I open a shop in a beautiful mall where people are going there for other reasons, they're going to see the movies or they're going to the gym or they're going to go shop at Nordstrom's Rack or they're going to go to the food court, then they will get the opportunity to see these dogs that are from death row but that aren't on death row anymore, that are safe and ready to be adopted.
Yeah.
Since I opened my first shop in 2011, we've had almost 2,000 adoptions out of that shop. I opened a second in Sacramento a year and a half ago, and then a third in Santa Clarita, California, 8 months ago. And it's really going to be across the nation. If you can help me, maybe we can get one up there. I offer a free franchise to a qualifying rescue. I also am willing to help them with the insurance and the startup costs to get the shop up and running. And we can show shelter dogs in a safe, happy, warm environment so that people can feel comfortable about doing the right thing.
So awesome.
Isn't that awesome?
Shelter Hope Pet Shops.
Yes, Shelter Hope Pet Shop. We want one up there where you're at?
I want one up where I am. That's amazing. So what is that process if anybody here is, you know, who's listening actually from the Seattle area or anywhere, really anywhere that you're listening from, how would somebody, if they would like more information about this opportunity, how would they get that?
Okay, so they can email me or email you and you can forward it to me.
Mm-hmm.
And what we do, if you're a qualified rescue group, and I mean qualified if you've been working for, you know, a few years, if you have a 501c3, that's helpful. You just need to have a track record that you have been a rescuer and that you don't have, you know, you don't have any felonies. We would like to, you know, train you and work with you. You can come down to my shop and train, or I can send you videos of the training that we do and how we do it. We really like the shops to be run the same because we found that you can have a sustainable business model as a rescue if you do it the way that we're doing.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, you can tweak it and make it work for the region or the demographic that you're in, but you typically do need to be in a busy, high-traffic area so that the dogs can be shown.
Right.
Also, the nice thing about being in that type of area is you can get a lot of volunteers because kids need community service. Disabled people need a purpose and need to help, and we need them to help us save dogs so they can sit in the pens with the dogs and hold the dogs and socialize the dogs and comb the dogs. We also work with a group of veterans that come and walk the dogs. There's tons of ways to help. You can foster. I mean, fostering a dog saves us from having to board the dog at night. It can help them in their rehabilitation process because some dogs coming out of a shelter are a little skittish or scared or confused. So getting them to a nice foster home and bringing them back to the shop every day to be shown. You know, rarely do any of our dogs get boarded. They usually go to foster every night.
Mm. So
there's lots of ways to do it. We tweak depending on the demographic that you're in, we try to tweak it, but we do depend on the help of our volunteers. I work with the National Charity League. I work with between 100 and 200 volunteers every month, and we have shifts of two-hour shifts every day.
You must have clones of yourself running around doing all this stuff.
I wish. What I do have is I have a couple of wonderful managers of my shop in Thousand Oaks, and then I have a you were talking about at the beginning of the show, the D-Cup Saving Teacups, like Demetra, who has worked with me since since we started Z Cup. She's also a band member in the group L7, who's on tour, but she does our weekly and monthly newsletters, so she makes sure that all the dogs are up to date on Adopt-A-Pet, and she posts all the new dogs, and she sends out alerts when we have an emergency or we need help or we need dog food donated or we need dog food picked up that's already been donated.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it's about working with people that are willing to do whatever they can do. I rarely see Demetra, but she's constantly on her computer doing what she does to keep us mm-hmm. working.
So you said if someone's interested in this Shelter Hope Pet Shops idea that you've got going on down where you are and wanting to sort of franchise where they are, that they can get in touch with you. And what's the best way for them to do that?
They can email me at info@shelterhopepetshops.org.
Okay. info@shelterhopepetshops.org.
Yeah, and then just make the, you know, just address it to me. Dear Kim, I want to open up a pet shop, and then I will get back to you. We'll start talking. We'll start the dialogue, and mm-hmm. then hopefully you'll either come to my location or one of the others, and we'll get you in some training. You can see how it works. When you see how it works, you and if you're a rescue person and see how it works, you're usually, like, exasperated and amazed because
yeah.
it shouldn't work. But it does.
Yeah.
And it does because of the goodness and stability of people that are willing to help animals.
Yeah.
That's how we survive. It's because of the people that are willing to help.
Cool. Well, I'm going to help you get the word out about that up here anyway. I've got some other journalists and media connections who I think will be really interested in this story. There's a ton. I mean, as you know, Seattle is dog crazy as well, and there's just a ton of really excellent organizations and wonderful people doing work in the world of dog rescue, and I think that this, you know, that it would be a great fit for this. So
I agree with you.
Yeah.
Up where you're at, it is a much kinder, gentler people that take care of animals, and they're so effective. Your laws are better. Your regulations are better. Your shelter, everything up there is better. I wish I was up there, but I'm not. But maybe Shelter Hope can be up there.
Yeah. Well, when I do, because when we talked the first time, you said, when I'm down in Beverly Hills, to come and say hi, and we'll go to, I think it was Mr. Chow.
Yes.
So, of course, I haven't been down there yet, but when I do at some point get down there, I'd love to stop by one of your Shelter Hope pet shops and take a look. That'd be awesome.
Great. I look forward to hosting you at Mr. Chow.
All right. Sounds good. So I'm talking with Kim Sill. She's the founder of D Cups Saving Teacups, and also, you know, since we first talked, this incredible idea, Shelter Hope Pet Shops, and that is, the website is shelterhopepetshops.org, where it's sort of like a pet store sort of front, but housing shelter dogs who are ready, or shelter pets. Is it just dogs, or is it cats too?
We do have cats. We actually invite cat rescues to bring their cats in on specific days because we don't want to upset the kitties too much.
Right.
You know?
Yeah, yeah. Awesome. ShelterHopePetShops.org and DCupsSavingTeacups.com. And they also have a YouTube channel. I posted a link to one of the videos. I think it was from one of the Puppy Mill Awareness Days on our website, which is dogradioshow.com. So you can get an easy link to that and easy links to all of these if you're driving and can't write it down or whatever. Just go to the Dog Show homepage and you can get all of the contact here. You know, it was so funny. I walked into the studio today and Eric, my booth engineer here and director of operations here at KKNW, he's been with me almost every show of the past 6 years. There's this book called The Dog Merchants, Inside the Big Business of Breeders, Pet Stores, and Rescuers. And it was written by Kim Cavan, who is the author of Little Boy Blue. And I thought, Eric, you know, I've got this book here. I'm excited. I'll read it. I'll interview the author. And what a kind of a funny fit based off of the topic that we're talking about today, about this industry of pet stores and all that stuff.
Perfect, perfect timing. You know, the pet industry is a $50 billion a year industry, so there's a lot of money to be made. And if you do the right thing, you can help a lot of animals.
Thank you so much
for having me, and thank you. Please have people go to Saved in America, the film. They can see the trailer for the film, and hopefully next in the next few months it will be released on Netflix.
All right, great. Well, we'll keep a lookout for that, and when it is released, we'll be sure to let our audience know. And thank you so much for visiting us again today. I look forward to keeping in touch over the years and hearing about all the amazing stuff that you're doing down there. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much, Julie. Have a great day.
All right, you too.
All right.
So I was like, oh, I swear, over the years, I've never forgotten that interview. You know, some of them just stick out.
Yeah, great interview.
And she is just, I mean, again, she just blew me away again. With all the amazing stuff. I mean, this Shelter Hope Pet Shops thing is amazing.
It's a great idea.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that was Kim Sill, founder of D-Cups Saving Teacups, and also a documentary called Saved in America. And I'm going to post all of these links on our homepage, so you can just go to our homepage and you can get it all there, which, of course, is dogradioshow.com. And then I did have a couple of announcements before we go to break. And when we come back from break, we're actually going, I'm going to air my original interview with Kim talking about the first conversation that we had, the first time she blew me away with the work that they're doing in the second half of this show. So stay tuned for that. I did want to let you know, though, just some save the dates on some events coming up here in the Seattle area. The Seattle Kennel Club Dog Show this year is March 12th and 13th at CenturyLink Field Event Center. And you can go to seattledogshow.org for more information about that. That's a great event, and we will be there at a booth all weekend long. And then the Vashon Sheepdog Classic, Eric, you can see him wearing their sweatshirt today. This year, 2016, is going to be June 9th through 12th at Misty Isle Farms on Vashon Island. And you can go to VashonSheepdogClassic.com for more information about that fabulous event. We're going to take a break, and you'll be back. We'll be back. You'll be back as well, listening to The Dog Show with Julie Forbes. The Natural Pet Pantry is Seattle's original source for wholesome dog and cat meals, offering 8 different protein options to accommodate your pet's dietary needs. Made locally using all U.S.-sourced ingredients, their freshly ground stews, raw or cooked, can be purchased from their 2 stores in Burien and Kirkland, most independent pet supply stores, or delivered right to your door. Go to naturalpetpantry.com for more information. I'm Julie Forbes, and my first choice for my pet's food is the Natural Pet Pantry. It's the educated choice.
This is Martha Norwalk. Every Sunday morning, beginning at 9 a.m., thanks in part to NuPro Supplements, we cover the world of animals. This week, January 31st, it's an encore presentation with Zach and Haley, lead farmers from the Ananda Farm and CSA on Kamano Island. Learn about no-till organic farming, all the products they're making, and how you can participate in the CSA and dinners at the farm next summer. They're an extraordinary young couple you'll enjoy knowing. Join us for Martha Norwalk's Animal World Sunday morning, 9 a.m. to noon, right here on Alternative Talk, AM 1150.
Eric, people ask me to help them with all sorts of doggy challenges.
I can only imagine.
Oh, yeah. Dogs jumping on guests, new puppy questions, behavioral challenges like fear and aggression, even dog food sensitivities. You name it, and I've probably worked with it.
But can you help people even if they don't live in Seattle?
Absolutely. I've had great success with phone consultations and have even Skyped with people and their dogs from all over the country. Every dog should be approached as a unique individual. I've talked about this over and over again on the show. That's one of the parts of working with dog training and behavior that I love the most. Every client is different. If you're listening and you need help with your dog, just get in touch. I'd love to get you pointed in the right direction and answer all of your questions. Email me, host@dogradioshow.com. That's me, Julie Forbes, host@dogradioshow.com. I look forward to connecting.
Wait, dogs can use Skype? We're really living in the future.
More choices, more topics, more shows. One station. Alternative Talk, 1150 AM.
The Dog Show is back with Julie Forbes.
Welcome back to the Dog Talk Show. We are back with Kim Sill, founder of D-Cup Saving Teacups, a California-based rescue group. Hi, Kim.
Hey, how are you?
Wonderful. I'm so happy to have you on the show.
And I am so glad to be here.
Good. This is one of the reasons why I love doing what I do, because I get to meet so many fabulous people like yourself. And I was introduced, well, I was told about your organization through another one of our guests, a local woman, Jennifer Bloom with Haute Portraiture. She's an artist, and she mentioned your group, and I thought, that sounds great. And then here we are.
Great.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, we're lucky that we're able to reach out through the Internet now, and we can touch people all over the nation, and now we're up in Canada. So it's wonderful that we have that access.
Wonderful. Well, will you tell us, first off, a little bit about what is D-Cup Saving Teacups and who is D-Cup Saving Teacups?
Okay, well, D-Cup Saving Teacups started out as a bunch of me and some other women that were fundraisers deciding to do more than just fundraise. We decided that we were going to go in and do some investigations on some pet shops that were selling puppy mill dogs. While doing that, we thought that, you know, a more effective way to be helpful would be to stand outside and give people information on where these animals were coming from. And through that, we were standing out there, and a lot of times people aren't nice to you when you're protesting.
Right.
But because we were all dressed nicely and trying to get the message out there, people received us pretty well. And we just came up with this name because all of us were big, busted women that were standing outside one day. Now, that's really just how it came out. And we love the name. We know a lot of people think it's campy and stuff, but you know what? As long as we get the message out about the animals, that's all that we care about.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think it's great. And so what is the structure of your organization? Like, how do you do your work?
Okay, right now our work is focused on kill shelters that are in this California area and getting animals out and in pet shops that are willing to carry shelter dogs.
Mm-hmm.
We've also been working with groups out of state that are willing to take the dogs, and we've shipped dogs to Montana, New York, Washington State, Nevada, and Park City, Utah.
Mm-hmm.
And the girls that I work with are all rescue women. Most of them have their own organizations, but we umbrella them through D-Cup. And if you go to our website, you can go to the page, The Real Women of Rescue, and you'll have all of the information of all the women. We have women that have groups up in Santa Barbara, in San Luis Obispo, in San Diego. And these women and I work together on a daily basis. I'm either on the phone with them, or I'm actually meeting with them at shelters, picking up animals and getting those animals into better situations.
Yeah, it just sounds like you have such a well-oiled machine as far as how you are transporting these dogs, relocating them. And the one thing that is just amazing is that you're actually making a connection between rescuing dogs from high kill shelters and pet stores, which
pet shops have not been well received in the animal community. And, you know, we contributed to that, I must say. Us protesting them and putting many out of business didn't help that relationship. So it took us about a year before we figured out that we need to be on the inside of these pet shops, not on the outside. You know, it's one thing to, you know, try to put somebody out of business, and then it's another thing to try to get someone to reorganize their business. And when we show most of these pet shops what it's like in a shelter, and we actually do, we take the pet shop owners to a shelter near them and show them what's going on. Most of them have never even been to a shelter.
Mm-hmm.
And most of these pet shop owners love animals. They wouldn't be in the animal business if they didn't.
Mm-hmm.
They just didn't realize that they're perpetuating this mass production of puppy mill dogs. And when we show them what they can be doing, we have changed not only their lives, but their businesses and the lives of thousands of animals. So it's been so rewarding.
Yeah. It's such a smart approach, and it's obviously, you know, the proof is in the pudding, and that you're, you know, the work that you're doing is just amazing. So, it's because the problem is not the root of it all is the puppy mills themselves and the existence of them. And You know, I had a client recently. I was working with a client because they had just gotten a dog that was 6 months old, was a Labradoodle, and which is a lab poodle cross. And she said, well, you know, she was just sort of describing the behaviors of her dog, and they had just gotten him at 6 months old, and he was just really very, very skittish and reactive. And he grew up, or was the breeder was in Eastern Washington, I think, 5 acres. And it seems that, and they had 40 dogs or something like that, 40 or 50 dogs, and it didn't seem like the dog had ever left the property, and then this breeder goes and ships the dog to Seattle. The dog had never been on leash. And it's like, who are these breeders that are just totally setting everybody up for failure, or making everybody's experience so much harder than it needs to be because they're not socializing the dogs and, you know, getting them used to novelty and different noises and all that type of stuff. But what was interesting to me was that my client, when I was asking them where they got the dog, well, it wasn't a puppy mill type situation, but, you know, and they went on to sort of describe the situation. And to me, it was definitely questionable. And the term puppy mill seems like an umbrella. I think people think of like a factory farm in Missouri, but there's a lot of online breeders that I think probably fall under that category as well.
I agree with you. I so agree with you. I think that the misconception for most people that are out there looking to purchase an animal and they want to buy it from a well-known or a good breeder, they think that the internet is the best source of doing so. They think that it's regulated. They don't understand that, like this dog that you're talking about, a Labradoodle, you wouldn't think a Labradoodle was mass-produced, but I've got to tell you, if 40 animals are on a property, that's mass-produced. If there's a mama and a papa, and one litter of puppies every 6 months, I can almost live with that, even though I don't like that because I know that they were putting Labradoodles to sleep in our shelters. But I could be okay with that. But in this particular instance, it sounds to me like this is just a great way to sell your dogs online, and people, you know, are not calling you a puppy mill because, you know, you're doing it in a different, you know, there's a different approach to the way that you're doing it.
Right, and it's not at a pet store. You know, people
exactly.
are thinking, oh.
But the new pet store is online. I, in the past 6 months, have gotten more calls about complaints of people buying dogs online than I have about people buying them at pet shops.
Yeah. And they can say anything. Anybody can make a beautiful website and say that it's a family operation. And by the way, a lot of the puppy mills, like hundreds of dogs, you know, horrible situations, were technically family-run organizations. You know, it was like a mother-daughter thing, and they had, you know, 400 dogs. And, you know, I mean, it's like you just have to be so careful. And I say, you know, try to rescue first. Find an organization that does rescue work. Get a referral from someone. And if you're going through a breeder, go there in person. You got to
exactly.
check it out.
If you really want a purebred dog, there's a great way to approach that. There's, you know, plenty of professionals that can help you do that and get you to the right sources. I mean, even Oprah Winfrey, she worked with Tamar Geller, who's a friend of mine and an animal trainer, and she took her to the backyard of the dogs that she wanted to get. So, you know, there are ways to do it, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Kim, we have a caller who has a question for you. We have Tina in Bellevue on line one. Hi, Tina.
Hi, Julie.
Do you have a question for Kim?
Yes, I do.
Go for
Hi,
it.
Hi, Kim.
Hi.
Your efforts are very impressive. Thank you so much for caring about dogs so much as you do. But I do have a question. Are there any statistics available, or have there been any surveys or anything to let people like me sort of get an idea if the effect that all of this, you know, all of our awareness of puppy mills and how bad they are and everything, has there been a decrease in the puppy mill usage or populations that they have or any of the mm-hmm. companies that may have closed or anything due to this mm-hmm. new awareness of ours, or certainly to me?
Well, I must tell you, that's a great question because, you know, in the past few years, it has never been more publicized, especially because Oprah did a show on it, too, and the Humane Society is doing lots of legislative things out of Missouri But there is no documented statistics that we're seeing in writing. But I can tell you from my own experience personally, it's a lot easier out there on the streets to get people to listen to my message. And that tells me that, you know, the awareness level is up. But our problems are that we're like we were just saying, we're dealing with the new way of selling dogs, which is online. And we're also dealing with the economy, and we're seeing lots of animals, you know, purebred animals that are being dumped into our shelter systems. And most people don't realize that 37% of the dogs in animal shelters in America are purebred. Mm-hmm. And they can go to the shelter and possibly find the dog they're looking for, a purebred dog, there first before they need to go anywhere else.
Right. Well, thank you again for all your efforts. I'm very impressed. And, Julie, I love your program. I love listening to it.
Thank you.
Thank you.
It's a great question. You know, you wonder how much, you know, from now, from 20 years ago, is, you know, how many pet stores. I remember when I was little, there used to be pet stores in the malls, and you don't see the. And as a kid, I used to want to go see the puppies. You know, little
well, you know,
did I know.
Is a much more progressive and a much more thoughtful area. You'd think California would be that way, but, Julie, we're not. We're terrible here. I mean, every mall you go into in California has a pet shop selling mill dogs from Missouri. Mm. And it's just despicable to me that in this day and age that, you know, the people that own those malls need to be more responsible. If they're animal lovers or care about issues that affect the world, they should you know, look at who they're renting to, and unfortunately, they don't. So, yeah. And by the way, it's hard to protest a store that is in a mall because legally they can throw you out because the mall is considered private property.
Mm-hmm.
And thrown out of many a mall, but there is a new way that we're telling people if you do see a pet shop in a mall that's doing this kind of behavior and selling, you know, animals that clearly are stated they're from a different state, we just go in there like we're customers and talk to the customers. We get in there and we just say, look, you know, if this dog is from another state, you need to really make sure that it is not a puppy mill because more than likely it is. 97% of the dogs sold in pet shops by the Humane Society, and it's a well-quoted number, mm-hmm. are from the puppy mills. So mm-hmm. we tell people that.
Yeah. Well, we're going to take a quick break, and we'll be back in just a few minutes with Kim Sill, founder of D-Cup Saving Teacups. You're listening to The Dog Show with Julie Forbes, Alternative Talk 1150.
Show with Julie Forbes. Never miss another episode. Listen to our podcasts online at dogradioshow.com or download them for free on iTunes or SoundCloud.
Wish your dog didn't hate going to the vet. Wish you were welcomed by a team who cared. Jet City Animal Clinic is an enjoyable respite from the same old thing. Dr. Anderson and her team have created a full-service facility that combines veterinary expertise with a comfortable style. Jet City Animal Clinic is located in Seattle's Capitol Hill neighborhood on 12th Avenue across from Seattle U. Bring your crazy questions, odd ideas, and alternative thinking. Jet City Animal Clinic will work with you to keep your furry family members healthy and happy. Traditionally educated with an open mind, call us at 206-329-0253 or email info@jetcityanimalclinic.com to make an appointment. Jet City Animal Clinic, a unique approach to the health care of your urban pet. A local family practice. JetCityAnimalClinic.com.
The Natural Pet Pantry is Seattle's original source for wholesome dog and cat meals, offering 8 different protein options to accommodate your pet's dietary needs. Made locally using all U.S.-sourced ingredients, their freshly ground stews, raw or cooked, can be purchased from their 2 stores in Burien and Kirkland, most independent pet supply stores, or delivered right to your door. Go to naturalpetpantry.com for more information. I'm Julie Forbes, and my first choice for my pet's food is the Natural Pet Pantry. It's the educated choice.
Tired of the insanity of other talk radio stations? Just click your radio knob and say, there's no place like Alternative Talk 1150.
And now, back to The Dog Show with Julie Forbes.
Welcome back to to the dog show. We're back with Kim Sill, founder of D Cup Saving Teacups. Hi, Kim.
Hey.
Welcome back.
Thank you.
So I have a question. We've been talking about puppy mills and pet stores and your rescue group and shelter dogs and how you take dogs from high-kill shelters and sort of relocate them and amazingly to